Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week and early part of next week, where the boss is. Well, I can't tell you where the boss is. I mean, I could, but then I'd have to kill you. I don't know how I'd get everybody, but, well, that voice you hear laughing is the very astute Ray Pritchard, founder of Keep Believing Ministries, direct from Kansas City. Good morning,
hey,
Ray. How you doing?
Hey, Ed, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And Fred Jackson is also in studio, as he normally is, here on Today's Issues for the first hour. News director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Good to be with you guys.
All right. It is Thursday, one of my favorite days of the week, because tomorrow is Friday.
I heard someone describe it after our devotion this morning. We were leaving our devotion room, and someone said, it's Friday Eve.
Friday Eve. I like that.
I never heard that before.
Positive feel to it.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought, I'm going to borrow that.
We can make it. We can make it, because tomorrow is Friday.
I'll tell you this, and then we'll move on. I'm only going to bore our listeners for just a brief moment. But I'm coming to the place where I think Friday's my favorite day of the week. Friday's my favorite day of the week. It's the end of the work week. You look forward to the weekend. You say, well, why isn't Saturday your favorite day of the week? Because Saturday, my wife works me like a dog.
There you go.
So Friday is kind of that day where you're looking forward to it. When Saturday gets here, and
yeah,
especially during the summer, and I got to go out and do yard work.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So nobody cares about my troubles, the troubles that I know.
Do we have violin music, Brent?
Nobody knows. clearly a first world problem for those
That's
of
right.
you out there screaming at your radio saying, at least you have a yard. So anyway, Fred, let's get us rolling on what's happening.
Peter Strzok, I think a name that most households across America have come to know, probably the best known name in the FBI in years. We've heard so much about him. He is the special FBI agent who initially investigated the Hillary Clinton email scandal.
Yes.
And in the wake of all of that, as they began to look at Peter Strzok, text messages between Peter Strzok and his girlfriend, lover, Lisa Page.
Right.
And began.
And we should say, Strzok was married at the time.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So. We've come to know these two FBI agents from their text messages primarily, and how they despise Donald Trump, given what their text messages said, and seem to favor Hillary Clinton. So it raised suspicions. There's been an IG's report on all of this.
Inspector General.
And clearly from the text messages, you would get the impression that the guy in charge of Hillary Clinton's email scandal wanted Hillary Clinton to win the election. And remember, he investigated her, interviewed her, didn't put her under oath, found there was nothing wrong.
And had charged with writing the document exonerating her.
Yes.
Even before he interviewed her on
yes.
behalf of the FBI.
So all of that is
right.
background. That's fact. That's
yes.
not opinion.
Right.
What's not opinion also is what he said in the text messages between he and Lisa Page. And they did not like Donald Trump.
Right.
They did not want him to win the election. In fact, at one point, there was a text messages that, which basically said on August the 8th, 2016, a couple of months before the election, in which Strzok, discussing with Page the prospect of a Trump win, says, no, he won't, we'll stop it.
No, he won't. In other words, win.
Yes.
We'll stop it.
Will being, I guess, Lisa Page and Peter Strzok or
right.
other people in the FBI.
Right.
We're left to speculate. All of this has led to a hearing today, a joint hearing between the House Judiciary Committee, headed by Bob Goodlatte as the chairman, and the Oversight Committee, which is chaired by Trey Gowdy, Congressman Trey Gowdy. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Peter Strzok sat in a closed session for 11 hours and answered all kinds of questions.
Right.
because there is a fear, there is a connection between the decision to have the Russia investigated by Bob Mueller and what the FBI was saying behind closed doors, especially Peter Strzok.
Right.
And it has led to great suspicion about the political bias within the FBI.
Right.
So these committees have been set up. They're investigating all of this. As I say, Strzok was behind closed doors, so he didn't know for sure what he said there.
Right.
Lisa Page yesterday was supposed to appear before these committees. She didn't show up, said she needed more time. Now, last night, Chairman Goodlatte gave her an option. She could appear today and sit beside Peter Strzok at this open session or come tomorrow and talk to these committees. Apparently, she is elected to come tomorrow.
Okay.
Because basically, they were going to send the marshals after her.
Really?
For not obeying the subpoena.
Okay.
If she didn't show up. But she chose not to sit beside Peter Strzok today.
That answers the question we were raising yesterday
right.
about what happens when someone says, okay, Congress subpoenaed me.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
So what?
So apparently now we know.
Now we know.
So you're saying they would have sent the marshals to physically bring her in?
They would have the authority to do that, although some people say, you know, Congress has never done that.
Right.
They issue subpoenas right. and then they let people go.
Yeah.
That's another story. Anyway, I want to get to now the hearing with Peter Strzok opened about an hour ago. What I want to take you through right now is the opening statements from Chairman Goodlatte of the House Judiciary Committee. And then we'll come back, and the next person to speak is Trey Gowdy, the chairman of the Oversight Committee. And then we'll hear from Peter Strzok himself.
Okay, so we'll have three clips.
We'll have three clips. But let's go first to Bob Goodlatte, Congressman Bob Goodlatte, who is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, in opening this hearing this morning.
For those who think we are wasting time in this committee, suppose all of this had been said about candidate Obama before he was elected, or even more topical about Hillary Clinton while she was running in the same election. Would we be where we are today? The only honest answer is an absolute affirmative yes. Of course we would be here, because every single Democrat would be protesting bias and discrimination against their preferred candidates by an out-of-control FBI and DOJ.
All right, there you have it. That's Chairman Bob Goodlatte, some of his remarks. And because what we're hearing from the other side, the Democrats on the committee, is basically it's the Republicans that are extremely biased.
Right.
And that this is driven by political bias, not by facts. So he was addressing that. Now, what you're going to hear from next is Trey Gowdy, Congressman Trey Gowdy. He's chairman of the Oversight Committee. He addresses specifically the doubts raised about an unbiased FBI raised by those email text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Let's hear from Trey Gowdy.
We learned that Agent Strzok has a most unusual and largely self-serving definition of bias. Agent Strzok, despite the plain language of his text and emails, despite the Inspector General's report, and despite common sense, doesn't think he was biased. He thinks calling someone destabilizing for the country isn't bias. He thinks promising to protect the country from someone he hasn't even begun to investigate isn't bias. He thinks promising to stop someone he is supposed to be fairly investigating from ever becoming president isn't bias. He thinks talking about an insurance policy to keep someone from becoming president isn't bias. That's for one of the folks he was investigating. He has a different set of rules for others that he's investigating. Agent Strzok thinks saying someone he is allegedly investigating should be elected president 100 million to zero before he ever interviews her. He doesn't think that's bias.
All right, so obviously the last remark that Trey Gowdy was referring to.
That was brutal.
Yes. So,
wow.
Now, all of this, and the reason Trey Gowdy was focusing on this definition of what is bias and what is not, is because he was able, Peter Strzok released his opening statement, the text of his opening statement, ahead of time. So it kind of tipped off Trey Gowdy,
right.
And that's why he dealt with that. So now I want to play a clip of Peter Strzok, his opening remarks. Let's hear what he has to say about what constitutes bias, et cetera, et cetera. Have a listen to it.
Like many people, I had and expressed personal political opinions during an extraordinary presidential election. Many contained expressions of concern for the security of our country, opinions that were not always expressed in terms I'm proud of. But having worked in national security for 2 decades and proudly served in the U.S. Army, those opinions were expressed out of deep patriotism and an unyielding belief in our great American democracy. Not once in my 26 years of defending our nation did my personal opinions impact any official action I took. This is true for the Clinton email investigation, for the investigation into Russian interference, and for every other investigation I've worked on. It is not who I am, and it is not something I would ever do, period.
So there you have it. It comes down to, so Trey Gowdy outlines these text messages. He wanted Hillary Clinton to win 100 million times over.
Right, 100 million to one, to nothing.
Yeah, he wanted Hillary Clinton to win. He did not want Donald Trump to win. Remember, this is all in the time of the election campaign going on. Now, if you listen to Peter Strzok, he wants the American people to believe that his feelings, his personal feelings about Hillary Clinton and about Donald Trump had no bearing on his investigation of Hillary Clinton, had no bearing on what he would do within the FBI. Remember that text message? I want to read it again. No, he won't, referring to Donald Trump. We'll stop it. Now, at some point today, if it hasn't happened...
No, he won't win, is what he was saying.
That's right.
That was the context of the discussion.
Yeah.
The texting.
Yes.
The discussion between himself and Lisa Page.
I am sure that particular text message is going to come up today, I would assume maybe from a Trey Gowdy. What did you mean by we'll stop it? We'll. Who's we?
Yeah.
Is it Peter Strzok and Lisa Page? Or is it the FBI? And what do you mean, stop it?
Yeah.
How do you stop the country from electing someone? What do you do?
Well, let me get Ray in here. Now, Ray, this, I will say this. If it wasn't for, like, this text message that Fred just read and several other things that have gone on, I would probably give someone in the FBI the benefit of the doubt, because I'm sure there are all sorts of people working in the federal bureaucracy who have their own political opinions. They're entitled to them when they're talking around the water cooler. You know, I'm sure one says I'm for Hillary, the other one says I'm for Trump. I get that. However, this was not a low-level person, Peter Strzok. He had very important roles in the investigation of Hillary Clinton. And then in this whole, if I'm not mistaken, Fred, in this whole Steele dossier, this effort to smear then candidate Trump and then President Trump, he had a large role to play in that. And when you put that role and the amount of power in his hands with a statement like he made in his text message, I got to say, Ray, I'm not buying it.
You know, number one, to your point, yes, we hold the FBI in high esteem. The men and women who serve there serve our country, and many of them put themselves at great risk. So they're due extra deference, right?
Right.
And we want to say that. But you listen not just to what he said, but to the tone of his voice, the dismissive tone, to say, I have never in all, 28 years, I have these incredibly strong opinions. I have never let them influence anything I said or did. Well, Ed, you're right. I'm not buying it. It's completely unbelievable. He's just whitewashing everything. And I think before this day is out, guys, there's going to be some fireworks up there between Trey Gowdy and him over the real question, who's the we and we'll stop it.
And then also, and we mentioned this already, Fred, the fact that he was charged with writing the document that would exonerate Hillary Clinton before he himself interviewed Hillary Clinton. This goes back to the email scandal and the email server scandal and all that. He was also the one who changed the wording of Comey's statement that was going to, I think the one that was going to be read before Congress, and using language that softened his assessment of Hillary Clinton's actions as Secretary of State. He was in charge of interviewing Hillary Clinton, did not put her under oath, and he was also in charge of this Steele dossier, this attempt to smear candidate/President Trump. You put that together with the fact that he wanted Hillary Clinton to win 100 million to zero and refused to allow for the possibility that Trump could be elected, and we will stop it. And then the other comment, the insurance policy, we've talked about that a lot on AFR Talk and on this program. And so you look, just look at his actions. His actions undermine his defense that he's a patriot and has never allowed his personal beliefs to get in the way of his doing his duty. If it had not been for all these actions, I would say, all right, I just have to take your word for it, that you have never let your personal beliefs get in the way of your duties working for the FBI, but his actions undermine it.
Oh, absolutely. And something that Trey Gowdy said in his opening statement, Strzok's declaration that he never allowed his biases to interfere in these investigations, Trey Gowdy says that defies common sense.
Right.
It really does. Especially this, that text message, "We'll stop it."
Now, as you said, I'm sure we are going to hear more about that today, because we're looking right now. We're looking at the Fox News television feed in our studio, and these hearings are going on. They're ongoing. Who knows how many hours they'll go, you know, they'll last today. So there will be more that will be discussed, and I encourage our folks to continue listening to AFR Talk, because we'll have more for you as this unfolds and we get audio on it. But this is going to be going on all day, and I'm sure he's going to get grilled. I'm sure the Democrats in this dual committee hearing will be defending him and charging the Republicans with bias. But the opening comments from Goodlett, I mean, to me, is absolutely true. Any honest assessment, if this had been the opposite, if these comments had been made by a high-up official in the FBI towards then-candidate Obama and then-President Obama, or towards Hillary Clinton, I think that the Democrats would have been up in arms.
Yes.
And this is the kind of dishonesty that people are getting
tired
of.
In that case, Ed, whoever, you know, in that hypothetical case, they would have been marched out of the FBI that day, wouldn't have kept their job.
Right.
Well, to your point about how the Democrats would be acting if it's all the roles were reversed, it's very interesting. Gerald Nadler, Congressman
New York.
From New York. He is the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee. In his opening remarks, he basically says this is a total waste of time.
Right.
What this committee should be working on is those thousands of children who are being separated from their parents. That's what he went into. And then he had a bunch of Democratic friends standing behind him as he was making his statement with the pictures of those who have been charged already under the Mueller investigation, and they were holding up big pictures of them.
Right.
So this is a sideshow, is what's going on. And the Democrats are doing everything that they can to discredit the points that are being made. But you cannot argue with the facts that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page exchanged messages which clearly showed their bias in favor of Hillary Clinton and their bias against Donald Trump. And those last, I'll read it, you know, no, he won't, referring to Donald Trump, will stop it.
Yeah.
That's key. That's key.
And Nadler's comments is ridiculous, because this is the House Judiciary Oversight Committee, one of them. What's that got to do with what's happening on the border?
Yeah.
So the fact that he's saying what this committee should be doing is ludicrous. But like you said, it is typical theater in Washington, D.C., and I'm just I'll admit that if the roles were reversed, Republicans would be doing the same thing, and I think Americans are getting tired of that sideshow mentality, political theater. They want honesty in Washington, D.C., and in this case, they're not getting it from the Democrats. I think this is, if what these kinds of text messages indicate has been happening with the FBI, and under the Obama administration, we've had other things with the weaponizing of the Internal Revenue Service and those other kind of things. All Americans should be terrified of the federal government being used, depending on who's in office, to go after political opponents with the might of the federal government. Yeah. Nobody on either side of the aisle, Ray, I'll let you comment, should be in favor of that.
Well, democracy only flourishes in an atmosphere of trust when the common man, the common woman, when we the people can look at Washington and say, these are not perfect people, but we trust the FBI.
Right.
But we trust the CIA. But we trust the, we don't like giving the IRS our money, but fundamentally we believe that there are honest people up there. And what's happening with what's happening today is that our trust in the fundamental institutions, the bedrock institutions of American government, it's being shaken. And this hearing, I'm afraid, is only going to make it worse, because it seems clear there was partisan activity on behalf of Hillary Clinton and against Donald Trump at the highest levels of the FBI. And that's bad, not just for the FBI, but that's bad for the whole country.
And well, maybe beyond the level of the FBI, too, because in the discussions and what has come out over the last several months that we've been looking at this, you mentioned Peter Strzok's involvement with the dossier. All right, this, which was paid for initially, remember, by the Hillary Clinton election campaign.
They wanted dirt on Trump.
And the FBI began to use that to go to the FISA court. Now, what came out as that information was unfolding is an indication that while this was going on, that briefings were going all the way to the White House.
Yes.
On this. I'm not sure they'll get to that today, but this goes well beyond the FBI.
Right.
This goes to an administration at the time. It goes to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch at the time. It's a big picture. It should be a big picture investigation. I'm not sure this committee will go that far today.
Well, and we'll have to wait and see. But to Ray's point, you know, these are the kind of things that we always kind of ridiculed what's derisively called banana republics in South America and Central America, where you have this particular politician take power, and then the military is used. You have these, you know, military execution squads, and they use the power of that government to go after their political opponents. And then if they can flip the canoe, so to speak, and the other side can get on top, they do the same thing to their political opponents. That's the kind of thing you do not want happening here, obviously because it's our country, but also because as the most powerful nation in the world, the power of the federal government is just unmatched. And the thought of that government with all of its power, then you add to that some of the fears of the, you know, militarization of the police, you start entering into that kind of what used to be kind of a wacky, you know, the perspective of, you know, late night radio talk show hosts on other networks where they had conspiracies galore, and you start going, well, doesn't sound so far-fetched if you allow the federal government to become a weapon in the hand of one political party against its opponents. You have that very real possibility, and it's not just for the loons who peddle their conspiracy theories. All right, look, we're going to take a break. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. Ray Pritchard is also joining us, and Fred Jackson. We're going to continue on looking at the news of the day. You're listening to American Family Radio. Today's issues. We'll be back after a few minutes and ask you to please join us.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
You know, people often ask me, Tim, what's your favorite part of the Holy Land Tour? I've been leading Holy Land Tours for many years now. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I learned how to lead these Israel tours from my dad, who started doing them in the 60s. And then he taught me in the 80s and 90s. And now my wife, Allison, and I lead these tours annually to Israel. And we love going because we love seeing people's eyes when they see things, such as the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and the Garden Tomb and the Wailing Wall. See all these things for the first time and maybe the last time in many folks' lives, because this is a bucket list trip. We're going to be going in March. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. And we'll send you a brochure. If you want to go to the website, everything's there, twholyland.com, twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. The University of Kansas has removed an American flag that was desecrated to protest President Trump, a terrible wrong that was righted thanks in large part to the listeners of this radio commentary. The flag had been flying for several days outside the university's art museum, part of an installation called Pledges of Allegiance. After we first broadcast the story, Kansas Governor Jeff Collier called the university's chancellor and ordered him to take immediate action. The governor told me he was outraged that a taxpayer-funded institution would display a sacred flag with such disrespect, not to mention the message it sent to veterans. The university moved the desecrated flag indoors, citing public safety concerns, but they did not apologize to the veterans, alumni, or taxpayers who were offended. Just something to remember the next time the university comes looking for a government handout. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I'm joined by Ray Pritchard and Fred Jackson. We're going to come back to the House Judiciary Oversight Committee's hearings with FBI agent Peter Strzok in just a moment. We have some additional sound that Steve Jordahl, one of our reporters, has gotten for us. We're getting that in the system. And as we're waiting on that, Fred, we have something else that we can discuss in the meantime?
Absolutely. This Ave Maria School of Law in Florida, we were discussing this morning. I think the founder of Domino's Pizza was?
Yes, founder of Domino's, Tom. The name escapes me. I'll come back with it. But anyway, very wealthy. He sold Domino's Pizza and used his money. I think he's a practicing Catholic and wanted a law school in Florida that was not influenced by, you know, humanism and those kind of things.
Yeah.
So he poured his money into that.
In Fort Myers, Florida. Anyway, they found themselves one of the victims of the so-called abortion pill mandate under Obamacare, where basically former President Obama didn't care about the religious beliefs of an organization or that it's religious in nature, et cetera, took a stand, a pro-life stand. I don't care, you're an employer, you must provide abortion pills for your employees, okay? So that has gone to court. Yesterday, a federal district court issued an order that permanently prevents the federal government from enforcing the Obamacare abortion pill mandate against the Catholic Law School in Florida, Ave Maria, which was represented by the ADF. The order, according to a press release from the ADF, the order also declares that the mandate violates Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Now, that I found very fascinating. Now, this will probably be appealed.
Right.
By, I'm not sure who, but it'll likely be appealed by certainly pro-abortion groups.
Well, now, Wouldn't it have to be? Would that have to be? I wonder who brought the suit. If the suit was brought against Ave Maria mm-hmm. by the Obama administration, mm-hmm. then the Trump administration would have to be the one to appeal it. So, well, we're trying to find out more about this
yes.
about this case. But in any case, it is a very good ruling.
Yes.
Tom Monahan, by the way, was the founder of Domino's and the mm-hmm. one who has used some of that money to build this. I've never been there, but I've heard it's a very beautiful campus and mm-hmm. attempt to get natural law and those kinds of foundational principles back into the legal system. So,
does a ruling like this or a judgment like this, does it affect only Ave Maria, or will it have ripple effect out to other Christian schools, organizations?
Well, we kind of discussed that. Remember the whole refugee dispute that started to go to courts?
Right.
Remember the
Hawaii judge?
The judge in Hawaii.
Federal district judge.
He says, my ruling applies to the whole
right.
country.
Right.
Remember that?
And we've
right.
had Abraham Hamilton III on. We've had Abe on before. Mm-hmm. And our understanding is a federal district judge, that ruling is supposed to only apply in yeah. that district.
Right.
Just like the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, their rulings only apply to the states that are in that circuit.
Yes.
But federal judges on the left have started saying, my ruling applies to the entire country.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that that's proper. We've had legal experts, you know, say that it's not proper. So we were joking around in our story meeting, well, maybe this court ought to apply it across the country. I don't think that that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. I think to Ray's point, it generally speaking only applies to Ave Maria, the law mm-hmm. school in Florida, although sometimes the reasoning used by judges on an appellate court can be picked up as a case goes up the ladder, or can be picked up by other courts mm-hmm. and used in their particular. I think that's the way it's supposed to work.
Right.
You don't usually find conservative judges doing what the Hawaii judge did. So we were just kind of joking around about it, but we don't want to continue bad practice. But anyway, that's a very good ruling, mm-hmm. and the fact that they use the Religious Freedom Restoration Act,
mm-hmm.
That gives some heft to that law and its application.
It's a good ruling.
So it is a good ruling. It is good news, not only for the Ave Maria School of Law in Florida, but also for other Christian schools and colleges and law schools that have been wrestling with humanistic, secular humanists and secular progressive attempts to squash their religious liberty. So we'll try to find out more about this ruling and get some more detail maybe next week. Mm-hmm. So, Fred, now we've got some more sound from the hearing that is ongoing right now in Washington, D.C., involving FBI agent Peter Strzok. Explain a little bit about what we haven't heard the whole thing, so we're going to find out we're going to hear the comments to find out what's in the comments.
In the opening of the program, we played a little clip of Trey Gowdy, who's chairman of the Oversight Committee, and he was casting doubt on the argument from Peter Strzok, FBI agent Peter Strzok, when he says the text messages between himself and Lisa Page may have shown bias, but he has never allowed, Peter Strzok says, bias to interfere with his work. Well, Trey Gowdy, I think it's safe to say, does not believe that declaration from Peter Strzok. So what you're going to hear now is another exchange. This time, it's Trey Gowdy exchanging words with Peter Strzok himself. And Trey Gowdy is again addressing a particular couple of text messages to Lisa Page from Peter Strzok about what they're going to do about candidate Trump. Remember, this goes back to the summer of 2016.
Yeah,
all right. So you're going to hear from Trey Gowdy, and then you're going to hear the voice of Peter Strzok.
You're the lead investigator. You originated the investigation. You're the point of contact. You drafted the document. Then that same day, your colleague, Lisa Page, wrote, maybe you're meant to protect the country from that menace. And you responded, I can protect the country at many levels. And then on August the 8th, you still hadn't interviewed anyone. You're 8 days into your Russian collusion with the Trump campaign investigation, and you got another text from your colleague, Lisa Page. Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right? And you replied, no. No, he's not. We'll stop it. What's the it?
Chairman Gowdy.
We'll stop it.
Chairman Gowdy, that text needs to be taken in the context
Look, if you want to have a debate over a two-letter word, we're going to have to do that some other time. What and who did you mean by it?
Mr. Gowdy, as I've stated, that text was written late at night in shorthand.
I don't care when it was written.
About.
I don't care whether it was longhand, cursive. I don't care about any of that.
Well, we still didn't get the answer, apparently.
maybe we'll stop it.
It takes me back when I was listening to this and Trey Gowdy saying, you know, two-letter word. Takes me back to Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Depends what your definition of the word is. In the Monica Lewinsky investigation.
Yeah.
Boy.
Well, listen, that's and so we're going to see if we can get some more sound to. I want to hear the end of that.
I do too. What does it mean?
Yeah. Well, listen, this is classic. If you've watched Law and Order, if you watched any of those kinds of legal programs, you know when there's a prosecutor and someone who's on the is in the docket and is being accused, this kind of interplay is not something unfamiliar to us. Peter Strzok, he is clearly caught. Okay. This text is dangerous to his assertion that he may have his opinions, but he checks his opinions at the door. That, especially the expanded view of what went on in the text, I don't know we're going to try to find the rest of it, but Ray, I don't know what kind of explanation you can have to wriggle your way out of that.
Well,
one
he was starting to say late at night, right?
Yeah.
You know, look, that didn't help a guy, right?
That's right.
You know, what you write late at night often is down to the bottom line of what you really think and feel. So I think he was getting himself in worse hot water at that point.
Well, and I will say this too, that Trey Gowdy, now he's an attorney, right? He's a South Carolina congressman.
Yes,
I think he's an attorney. Right. So he was playing a little bit to the cameras and to the American public when he said twice, just in that exchange to Peter Strzok, talking about the communication he had with Lisa Page. He said your colleague, he said that twice.
Uh-huh. And that was good.
Yeah, that was one of those that's cold moments when you have a prosecuting attorney that he was leaving unsaid the fact that Peter Strzok was having an affair. He's a married man. He's having an affair with Lisa Page, he's wanting the American people to recognize that without being the guy who actually says yeah,
right.
The woman you're committing adultery with.
By the way, he is a former federal prosecutor.
Oh, there you go.
And he sounded like it in that clip.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna see. Steve Jordahl may have. He's the one who sent over that clip. He may have some more when he comes on. But I'm sitting here going, oh, I got to hear the end of that exchange. I don't care how long it is. So, all right. Anyway, so that's going on today, folks. So that's we're kind of interrupting coverage and discussions of other topics when we can get some sound from the ongoing hearings that are involve Peter Strzok, and so this will be interesting as it unfolds. You'll hear more throughout the day. I'm sure that Janet Mefford will have some, and of course Brian Fisher they'll have other comments and clips from that very informative and entertaining conversation going on in those.
It's
hearings.
Very compelling TV.
Yes.
You know,
it is.
Given the profile of this story that most Americans are very aware now of these text messages and the whole investigation, this is the first time the American people have had an opportunity to hear directly from Peter Strzok.
Right. You remember, you talk about how this being compelling television, Ray and Fred, both of you guys remember the Oliver North testimony before Congress on was that on Iran-Contra? Was that
or was it Nicaragua?
Nicaragua might have been. I forget now. But that was spellbinding. That was the first time I think that maybe since the hearings in the 1950s involving the McCarthy hearings But that was spellbinding television and made Oliver North a kind of a household name. So
yep.
All right. Well, we're going to move along. We have a stranger to the American Family Radio Network listening audience, Alex McFarland. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Alex. No, all of you probably know Alex and from one show or another, author and apologetics expert. He's also co-host of Exploring the Word with Bert Harper, heard weekdays on AFR at 3 p.m. Central Time. Alex, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be on.
Yeah, we've just been going on and on about the hearings going on in Washington, D.C. You're welcome to opine if you'd like. We do have some other issues to kind of deal with you, to ask you. We want to use some of your expertise on college campuses to maybe bring some enlightenment to us and to our listeners. But let me just ask you, have you had a chance to hear anything that's going on in Washington, D.C. involving Peter Strzok?
Just a little bit. It you know, it sounds almost like a movie script, doesn't it? I mean, you've got power, you've got abuse of power, the government, matters of national security, and a love triangle.
Yes.
I mean, it's a blockbuster movie script right there, isn't it?
Yeah, and boy, I never thought that kind of thing would happen in Washington, D.C., but I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that that's going on in our nation's capital.
Tongue in cheek.
Let me
throw something out there. And by the way, it's great to be on. And I just, you know, the American Family Radio Network has just become such an incredible part of my own professional life. But the friendships and the relationships like yourself and Bert Harper and Jim Stanley and, of course, the Wildman family. AFA, for those who do not know, or maybe you're kind of new to AFA and AFR, it is one of the great institutions of our country, really, for the spread of the gospel and, you know, truth and righteousness in our culture. But so much of, I think, what has been happening in our government and by correlation in our culture has been the loss of morality. You know, an abandonment of character and morality, and the knowledge that it's incumbent on each one of us to live a life of truth and integrity, to tell the truth, to be a person of our word. And, you know, a lot of the problems that we've seen, and I'm just going to say this, the Democrat Party in 40 years ago plus, when decisions were made to be pro-abortion and pro-divorce and really to undermine the family, and then along comes the redefinition of marriage and a redefinition of human sexuality, and to cut oneself loose from any sort of moral compass, it's had a ripple effect throughout the culture. I spoke at a college yesterday. We could talk about that. But I think whether it's the FBI or whether it's, you know, the Democrats trying to obstruct the president's nomination to the Supreme Court and defend the right to kill unborn humans, we're paying the price for having cut ourselves loose from a moral compass.
Yeah, that's sad, but true. All right, Alex, let's, we have a couple of stories we want to kind of, send your way and get your comments on. Fred, what's first up for Alex?
Well, it's kind of interesting. This is a Baptist Press story, Alex, that I'd like to get your comment on. And the headline is Evangelical Leaders Embrace Kavanaugh Nomination. And, basically this, it's kind of a petition, I think, that has been put out, or at least a statement from several evangelical leaders, including the new president of the Southern Baptist Convention, J.D. Greer, and vice president, several former president of the SBC, and the SBC's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, headed by Russell Moore, sponsored the document. And basically, they're celebrating President Trump's nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to be the new Supreme Court Justice, replacing Supreme Court Justice Kennedy. And they said, because of the great importance the Supreme Court plays in interpreting the Constitution, It is necessary that nominees be impartial and faithful to the Constitution as it is, not as he or she simply wishes it to be, the signers said, and adding they believe Kavanaugh's judicial philosophy fulfills these important criteria, and they will pray and work for a quick confirmation process. So I found that very interesting, coming from especially people like Russell Moore.
Who signed on to this, right?
Who signed on to this, actually put this petition together.
Right.
So Russell Moore, remember, condemned people in the evangelical community who voted for Donald Trump.
Right.
He basically said they were compromising their Christian testimony for voting for Donald Trump. So I found it kind of interesting that he would come out praising Donald Trump for this nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, because that was one of the reasons many evangelicals voted for Donald Trump.
Right.
Was for the composition of the United States Supreme Court and how important that is. So while condemning people who helped to put Donald Trump in office, they are now praising the fact of who he has nominated to go to the Supreme Court.
That is bizarre, Alex. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, I hope it's that Russell Moore is going to become a voice for what's good about this administration. And, you know, maybe he's a recovering never Trumper who's becoming awake. Maybe he's a recovering never Trumper who's 2 years in realizing, gee whiz, I guess this guy is the president now.
So you think maybe he's woke in the kind of modern vernacular?
that's kind of
nasty, isn't it?
You know, as they said of Kierkegaard that I awoke from my dogmatic slumbers. You know, maybe Russell Moore is awakening from his dogmatic slumbers, or maybe he's just seeing an opportunity to grab some headlines. I don't know his heart.
In fact, I was saying that about Kierkegaard to my wife this morning over breakfast.
As we all do.
That's right.
Let me say this. I know there has been some concern among evangelicals. There's not been quite the level of enthusiasm for Kavanaugh as there was for Gorsuch. I don't know, but I think there's probably a method to the madness, and there's a good plan here, I think. You know, with his Roman Catholic background, I hope that Kavanaugh is a believer in natural law.
Right.
You know, what Jefferson, you know, when they talk about natural law or moral truths, and among these, the right to life, that would be an outflow of belief in moral truth, that it is immoral to murder, and
right.
it is wrong. And Jefferson talked about natural rights that emanate from self-evident truth, natural law, and God, the ground of moral reality. So with Kavanaugh's Roman Catholic background, I have great hope in his awareness of and belief in natural law and how really that is the foundation of our judiciary. And while I wish there was a more declarative and definitive stance on life and opposition to Roe versus Wade, while the opposition to Roe v. Wade may not be there on record as much as we would want, his philosophical foundations could provide that, though. Ed, do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do, and I think that's the hope of a lot of folks. Even like here at AFA, we do share some of those questions. We still have those questions, and we're hoping
sure.
that those will be resolved. Those questions will be answered during the confirmation hearings. So certainly hope that comes. Hey, Alex, before we let you go, we do have at least one other issue, one other story we want to get your take on, because it does involve college and university campus. So, Fred, what's that story?
Yeah, Alex, you've told us you visit many campuses across the country. I'm kind of hoping you get an invitation to Florida State University.
The Seminoles.
Yeah.
Oh, I was there in the fall of 2000.
Well, you may need to go back. Yeah. Florida State University has initiated what they're calling their Social Justice Living Learning Community. All right. So
This sounds like a party.
Yep. Let me read to you. According to the program's website, the themed dorm. All right. So
this is a whole dorm.
This is a whole dorm. Allows students to, quote, discuss and challenge common beliefs on race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, class, religion, ability, citizenship, political ideology, and other identities. Do you think you're going to get an invitation to that one?
You know, in that environment of hyper-tolerance, the one thing that I can pretty much guarantee would not be tolerated would be Christian and moral truth.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Ravi Zacharias, great Christian thinker. 2 years ago, we had Ravi at one of our conferences, and Ravi Zacharias said, college in America has become 4 years and $100,000 to discover that you can't know anything. And I can just imagine the bubble of lunacy that is going to be that social justice safe environment where snowflakes can't melt.
Well, Ray, we said in our story meeting this morning when we were talking about this, we said we got to pitch this to Alex, and we were not disappointed. Isn't going to end well, is it?
No, it's not. And to go back to the Russell Moore thing, I just want to congratulate him on issuing a press release. It sounds like it could have been written by the American Family Association.
Yes. So I'm sure he appreciates that. Yeah.
And we've all got to pull together here. And I don't know, philosophically, some of us, you know, we love God and country. We love God and country, and some people come to the party at different times. But, let's hope that the Spirit of God can unify us to proclaim Jesus, defend the faith, and save our Constitution.
Well, you get a hearty amen for me on that, Alex. That's what we want. That's what we need. That's what we need to have. And it would not hurt for us to, in fact, maybe you're the one to kind of pitch that. You're Southern Baptist. You're well known. Maybe you're the one to pitch that as a way for us to get together with Russell Moore and J.D. Greer and some of these others. We have had differences in the past, not with J.D. Greer at this point. I think those who have maybe a different take on the immigration issue, for example, is there some way that we can still get together and understand the fact that we do disagree on biblical grounds on that issue? Can we get together on some of these others? Maybe that is a job for Alex McFarland.
Well, I'm going to work on it. And you know what? The perfect environment, we'll do it over some good old North Carolina barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
And maybe I'll have a cookout and try to invite everybody over.
Hey, now listen. You haven't even invited me, but I accept. If you're going to have food, you're going to have a cookout, and it's barbecue. I'll warm my way into that
there.
Invitation.
So. Well, you're all invited, and oh man, how much I love and appreciate all of you guys. And hey, where's Tim today?
Well, he's on vacation. I can't tell you where, because we have to protect our president. You know, and
yes.
Location has to remain a secret. But
undisclosed location.
Yeah, undisclosed location. Right. Hey, Alex, we're going to let you go. Thank you, brother.
Hey, God bless you guys. Keep us in prayer.
Folks, we'll 5-minute break. We will be right back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.